Welcome to the OA Light a Candle Meeting podcast. Visit our website at www.oalaig.org, where you'll find several speaker feeds with over 400 speaker files, forms for ordering CDs for these speakers, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Michelle.
Hi, everyone. I'm Michelle, I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Michelle. All
right, just checking everyone out tonight. Looking good. So I just stick with the format, what it was like, what happened, what it's like now, share in a general way my experience, strength, and hope. Let's take a few breaths up here and go, oh, I'm calm or not. Thank you. Yeah, thanks, Michelle, for asking me to lead this meeting or share at this meeting. I listen to the podcast and it's a pretty cool experience to be able to be up here sharing my story with you guys. So I'll just start from the very get-go. When I was born, I wouldn't really eat and my mom didn't know what to do with me. I wouldn't take the milk. I wouldn't, you know, and I don't know, is that an eating disorder, probably not, just the way I was born, but it's just ever since I, you know, was a very infant, I struggled with food and eating, and up to the age of about 5, I was very, I remember consciously one time being with my mom and her putting food in front of my face, and I just shook my head, no, I'm not going to eat it, and I just distinctly remember that, like, being like, no, like, at 5. And my brother was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes when I was 6 months old and he was 2 years old. And so by the time I was about 5 or 6 and realizing that everything was about when he's eating, when he's going to get his insulin, when he's going to go to bed, when he's going to wake up, and him, and what about me, you know, I realized that if I just followed him to the kitchen when they were going to eat, that then too I would get that attention because I'm hungry too. And so, you know, that coupled with the experience very young, I mean, when I would sit in class, I wouldn't move. I would like sit there like stone rock. Like when I, you know, they had like seating charts, and when I had to sit in the front of the classroom, I was like, oh, because everyone was looking at me, like everyone. I'm like 6, like who, like who's looking at you, you know? And I carried that actually all the way until I graduated with an advanced degree. I was like always that. Then when I could choose, I would always sit in the back of the classroom because I didn't want people looking at me because everyone is looking at me. I guess everyone is looking at me now. Joke's on me now, anyway. Except you can't see me, but hi. So, you know, I always, it's just, I love, like, that's what, in step 4, it talks about egomaniac with an inferiority complex. Like, hey, come here. Oh, no, get away. Hey, it was like this dance, and I guess I started that really early. So, I, you know, just being so uncomfortable, like, just uncomfortable. You know, there was just things going on at home, just in a general way, and so I just didn't want to feel at a very young age, and I realized that when I would go with my brother, I'd get the attention, and then I'd also get the food, and so coupling that together was not very useful for a compulsive overeater. So I gained about, like, I looked at my pictures, my parents were like, oh, we have photo, this was like 2 weeks ago, like, oh, we have photo albums, if you want to look through them, and then I just stopped looking through, because it's like, I just look at, like, how much weight I gained in such a short a period of time, being such a young child, and what was lucky for me was that nobody really said anything. Like, none of my classmates really made fun of me. I had friends, but I was just so shy. I would just turn away, like, we'd be walking across the blacktop, I haven't said that word in so long, and, isn't that weird, right? Seating charts, blacktops, I don't know, I'm not a teacher, so I don't say that in my daily life, but I just can't, like, emphasize enough just how uncomfortable I was as a person, and shy, and timid, and So what I did was I participated in the eating, and then also I found that if I was really good at things, people wouldn't pay attention to me. So if I just did everything right, then I wouldn't get called on, I wouldn't have to go to detention, I wouldn't be called out in class because they always knew I was paying attention because my homework was always turned in. And one time in fifth grade, so I had done all my homework, I'd never miss a day of class, even if I was sick, I went, blah, blah, blah. So in fifth grade, I had this homework assignment, and I didn't do the last question because I was like, I'll just copy it from someone when I get there, because I'm a perfectionist, but if I can't figure it out myself, I'm going to freaking cheat from you so you think I'm perfect. And, albeit. And so I was going to copy, and I forgot to copy off somebody. And she didn't stamp my homework. And I went missing for 3 hours at school because I was so upset. Because I'm perfect, and this is the first assignment I missed, and so from here on, and it was just so black and white. Like, everything in my life has been black and white. It's like either 100% done, or screw it, I'm not going to do it all. And they found me, but I didn't get in trouble because I was just so perfect and I had a bad day, and my parents were like, what the heck? And that just, how I was, and sometimes I can see that too in myself now. And anyway, so I started to really gain some weight and momentum with that, and then I had a friend who had older sisters, and her older sisters were into losing weight and throwing up and boys and concerts and alcohol and not eating. And my friend was part of a swimming team, and her coach taught her about negative calories. What are these? And and there's no such, well, I don't think there's such thing, but at the time it was very attractive to me because I was overweight, and we would be sitting there eating like hordes of food, sugary things, talking about negative calories in her kitchen. And that is like the epitome of my compulsive overeating. Like, how can I eat as much as I want and have no consequences for my actions, and yet be also talking about how I'm not going to eat? I mean, just all these insane ideas that just carried with me. So by the time I got to sixth grade, I was going into middle school, I better, like, you know, and I have all these new introduction of grown-up, what I perceive to be grown-up cool things. And my mom always took me, she tried to get me into sports, like peewee tennis, and like I was never good at anything. I was overweight, I wasn't good. I couldn't swim, I couldn't play tennis, I played soccer, I was mediocre, I was never really good at anything, I mean, except school. And she put me in this after school program, and I would always quit. Like, all the kids would be running, and he's like, come on, finish. The coach would be like, let's finish, and I'd be like walking, so I'm like, wah, wah. When I realized I wasn't going to win first place, I would walk. And people would call me a sore loser, and I'm like, you know, like, I just thought, am I close enough to this? I'm fine, right? Go here, okay. I don't want anyone to miss me thing, you know. riveting, you're all on the edge of your seat. No. I'm kind of like, what did happen next? No. I should probably look at... Okay. So... I was in this... We were members of a country club, and poor me, and so I had a coach who just saw this like poor attitude when it came to working out, you know, poor attitude. And he's like, why don't you try a push-up? And I'm like, I can't hold myself up. And he was like, try it on your knees. And I remember I got on my knees, and I pushed myself up. And I got back down, and I pushed myself up again. And for the first time, I felt strong. And I said, this is it. I'm going to do this. You know, because I felt so powerless in my life. I had no power at home. You know, I'd come home from school and just sit and eat and watch those four cartoons that were on. It was just so miserable. And like, I found something that made me feel strong because I felt so weak. And I'm not somebody that does things like Moderately. So when I realized that I liked this, I'm like, I'm going to do this all the time. And so I started going after school to the gym. And then it was summertime, like a week or two later, and my mom was really into fitness. She was an aerobic instructor back in the day, and so she just carried that with her whole life. And we started taking classes together in the morning, and in the course of the summer, I lost like 30, 40 pounds. So that was from 6th to 7th grade, and to go from one school to the next and to lose that much weight and to literally have every single person, parents, kids, teacher, oh my gosh, you look so good, and what did you do, and wow, and just, and then the attention from the men, and I mean, it just all started, you know, it just all started for me, and it's like, the hole was there, and it just, all that shit, I just threw it in, just like, couldn't get enough, and I got into, you know, anything that was around. I didn't care. I picked it up. Food, sex, drugs. I'm pretending like I can't name anything else. There's probably a thousand other things. Anything. I don't care. Name something. No. Attention. And, you know, and then at that time, it was like, screw you to my parents because you didn't really help me. The only thing you helped me do was gain, you know what I mean, 40 pounds. And even though it, you know, and so... started down that road, and all through high school, and the compulsive over-exercise, the restricting, the dieting, the insanity, the binging, the attempts at physical purging, just the insanity of this disease, holy moly. Just like a tornado, just storm, disaster. I mean, there's so many like descriptors of what this disease did to my life, and the fact that I was 100% unaware. I mean, you could not tell me. I was convinced that if I lost more weight, I would be happy. 100%. I didn't even talk. I mean, it was not for discussion. No. Like, that is it, period. Like, if I just lose more weight, I will be okay. And yet, at the same time, I can't stop eating and over-exercising and injuring myself. And, you know, that's not a fun place to be. And I sat there for years, like, probably 15 years. And, in high school, I got a little more comfortable. I was still very shy. I was a very shy person, which is so funny because it's like the exact opposite of who I really am as a person and who I believe that my higher power wants me to be. But I couldn't make eye contact. I mean, I was always staring at the ground. People would be like watching me walk across campus. I'd walk in and I'd sit down and be all quiet, and they'd be like, "You're gonna freaking fall." I'm like, "Why?" They're like, "Cause you don't look up when you walk. So like, you're gonna trip on something." I'm like, "No, I can see right in front of me." to me, it made sense. You know, it's just the self-esteem was like non-existent. Because I got all my esteem from outside things. And when, you know, I always excelled at academics, but that's an outside thing. You know, and when I graduated high school, I moved because that clearly will fix it, and I moved to Newport Beach from Sacramento, which it's not really, there's not a big focus there on your insides and how spiritual you are, and so, no, but there is actually, but not when you're eight. When I was 18, and all I was worried about was the way that I looked, and I just fell into even more of a compulsive overeating tailspin. And just I worked at a restaurant, and I would just eat while I was there, eat while I was at home, take home the food. I mean, just on and on. And I'm like, should I get abstinent yet? I don't know. Let's see, what else happened? No, what other miserable stories can I tell you? No, I'm really just, like, trying to... Because for people that know, I mean, I'm not this person. You know, I am unrecognizable to myself. So it's just kind of, it's like interesting for me. You know, I don't want to forget where I came from. You know, because when I get all high and mighty and I'm so important and I work my, and then I forget that, like, I was, you know, basically on the floor before I got here and couldn't get out of bed. So, when I moved back to Sacramento and I was finishing up my schooling, the over-exercise became a huge part of my life. And what happened for me was I was competing in my sport and I got injured. And everywhere. I had 7 MRIs in a period of like 3 months, and everyone was worried about me. My body was completely inflamed. I mean, I was like, couldn't even walk. You know, so to go from all that exercise is competing and being at the top of my game and my sport to not being able to exercise at all, literally, because I could not. My problem was that, actually, you know what, that's so interesting. The thing that took me down, I was doing, I was at the gym and I was trying to do a push-up, and I went down, I was like on rep 7 or something, and I couldn't get up. I tore my complete last stuff that was in my body. And that's so interesting because it started with a push-up, and I just realized that. That's such a trip. And that was the end. And I just crawled in my coach's arms, and I just started bawling. I can't do this anymore. And so I gained a bunch of weight, shocker. And, you know, I was about 22, 23, and just having a... rough time, you know, because everything, it's like, my dad bought me a car when I was 18, and I lived here, and I did this, and I've traveled there, and blah, 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 and like, everything, I mean, you couldn't write a better fairy tale story about how I grew up, you know, it was great, and of course, there were other things going on, but, you know, on the very, very, very superficial outside, it looked so freaking fantastic, and on the inside was just filled with misery and insanity over this disease. This specific disease drove me to just the gates of insanity, like it talks about in the book. And what else happened? You know, I just, part of my story is, a lot of alcohol too, and so that obviously took off, and I finally got sober at age 23, and I'll see how that's relevant to my compulsive overeating when I get to my sponsorship. And being in sobriety and and still being miserable is kind of a hard thing as well. So putting away the alcohol, and then my sponsor suggested that I don't date, and so I didn't, really left me with the food, and not a lot of other coping mechanisms. So I mitigated, you know what I mean? I'm like, okay, I'm working a program, like, this is okay, and I actually moved 1, 2, 3 times, three or four times, I can't remember, I moved so much. 3 or 4 times in my first 3 years of sobriety, or 2 years of sobriety, I had like 5 sponsors, I, like 4 apartments, like, I mean, I just was like insane. I was just bouncing off the walls. I was crazy. I mean, I couldn't keep a job. I kept like, oh, well, this boss does this, and this person does that, and I can't work here because of that, and then what about me? Yeah, I was still full of fear and self-centered and self-seeking and all that stuff. And finally, my depression was so great and so bad, and I couldn't stop eating at work. I couldn't stop eating at work. I couldn't stop eating when I was going to work, at work, leaving work. I didn't know what to do, you know, because there was no restricting anymore. And there was not a lot of compulsive over-exercise because I was so depressed. I couldn't leave the house. And the amount of weight gain was scary to me, and it was happening very, very fast. And thank God, my first sponsor, for this is such a God shot, my first sponsor from Sacramento, that's why I say I got sober in 2010, and 2.5 years later, in September 2012, my first sponsor came down here to visit me, and her best friend down here has a best friend who has problems with food, which she had told me about in 2010 when I got sober, and I was like, she's like, call this lady, she'll know how to help you. I'm like, calling some lady and telling her about my food problem. Like, what? Like, I'm really going to call someone and be like, I can't stop eating. Like, or to even describe to somebody, like, the long history. Like, what am I going to start with? The breath smell? I wouldn't drink it. You know, like, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. So I didn't for 2.5 years. And we all went to this meeting, and so my first sponsor's best friend, had, at the time, had 17 years of abstinence and Overeaters Anonymous, and I met her, and they didn't really give me an option, like, it's your sponsor for OA. Okay, first of all, the hell's OA, and second of all, okay, all right, and so in September, October, November 2012 was when I started to come to meetings of Overeaters Anonymous. And I did my deal, which is sit in the back. I think I got there on time, though, which I don't know what's happened over the years. I've kind of gone around the train a little bit. and I definitely left early, and I definitely couldn't relate. So so I did that for a few months, and I went to, like, one meeting a week and hated it and ate before the meeting. Left the meeting early sometimes to go eat, and sometimes tried to eat during the meeting, but I was like, just wait. chew that gum like a psycho, and then once you get out of here, you can just go hit it, you know, because that's fun. And so, what's up with that? I hear that a lot, by the way. People are like, really? You struggled when you first came to OA? Did you gain weight? Heck yeah, I gained weight. You know why? And I told my sponsor, I'm like, this is the bullshit-ass program, because I'm coming here to get help, and I'm gaining weight. Like, this is ridiculous, and it's getting worse. And she said, of course. She said, you're going in there, and you're looking in the mirror, and every single person that's sharing is sharing all about you, and this is something that you haven't told anybody about, you know. And I did here and there tell people, so you know what I mean. But I didn't get that. I didn't understand, you know. But what I did understand is that working the steps and coming to meetings and having a sponsor will help people in 12-step programs. So I'm like, fine, because I had that experience already. And this woman really, you know, is and was to me, and still is, an angel of all sorts. Because she didn't know me. She didn't know who I was. She didn't know anything about me. She would meet me. She told me what to do. She gave me questions. And she gave me assignments from the book. And I would bring them, and I would meet her. And I would sit there, and I would order my food, and I would stare at the ground. And I wouldn't make eye contact for like an hour. And she'd be like, are you okay? She just loved me for no reason. She didn't know me. You know, she didn't know anything about me, really, except that I was a compulsive overeater, and I was struggling. And she sat there with me and just sat there and just, like, loved me, you know, and didn't judge anything that I was doing. And and if you've met my first sponsor in the other program, that is not my experience. Sure, Maya. Actually, she was the one that was like, you need to keep going to meetings. You need to keep doing all this stuff. And what happened for me was I was working steps 1, 2, and 3. Out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and calling my sponsor here and there. And I got fired from my job because I couldn't show up. I was late. I couldn't get people to where they needed to go on time. I was a mess. I could not function. I was not functioning. And I was thinking about checking myself into treatment because I couldn't stop having panic attacks. I had multiple.
multiple panic attacks per day. I couldn't drive. Couldn't leave my house. And I remember on Christmas 2012, I slept for 27 hours at my parents' house. And they didn't wake me up. I think they just knew. You know, they knew because I have a brother who struggles with the disease of addiction. And I just remember that. You know, so every Christmas I just think, like, I'm grateful that I'm not in bed for days, really. I mean, I had spent days in bed, but I would get up to eat. I mean, I just didn't leave. And that continued for, like, another month and a half. And really what my life consisted of when I was unemployed was drawing the blinds, watching TV, and eating. That was my life. I didn't pick up my phone. I didn't talk to my family. I really didn't call anyone back. That was it. You know, the end of the line. I didn't know what to do. But I knew, you know, I could do a little bit of reading. I could do a little bit of writing. I could call my sponsor. I could go to a meeting. I just did it. Even though it wasn't working and it was making me what I thought worse. And so my best friend, who I met at an Anorexic and Bulimic Anonymous meeting in Newport in 2011, and she's like my soulmate. She lives in Spokane, Washington. And we were Snapchatting earlier. Anyway, so she understood me, so I feel really safe with her. And I don't have a wide range of emotion, don't worry. Like, I get crying out. Anyways, so great. No need to hide. Anyway, this is, like, so sad. Is this a private school? I really need to step it up. Oh, it's public. Okay, that's fine. Is this a school? It's a church. Oh, okay. So I was, anyway, back to, like, the depths of depression and compulsive overeating and sadness. No, but, I mean, this disease is, it kills. I mean, to it says in the book, to drink is to die, to compulsively overeat is to die. It is to die, not necessarily physically, yes, because that's completely 100% possible, and also just to die this slow, painful, emotional death, you know? And, I was in my kitchen, and we were deciding what to eat for lunch, which was the freaking event of every day. I mean, breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks, I mean, this is the event, right? Like, this is all I do, and literally my head, I mean, there was so much going on, it was so loud that I couldn't take it anymore, and my head felt like it was going to explode, and I was shaking, and I was like, should I eat this, should I have healthy, should I have not healthy, should I eat what I want, should I be clear, what about this, and all of a sudden, my last thought was, I can't do this anymore, and everything was gone. Every negative thought, all the depression, all the sadness, it's gone. Just like that. And I don't know if it's a coincidence that I've been working steps 1, 2, and 3. I don't know. You know, I don't question it. But I can't have an experience like that and tell you that there's no higher power. For me, you know, I've had, like in the book talks about, I've had deep and effective spiritual experiences as a result of working the program of Overeaters Anonymous. That has been my experience. And it happens to me every single day, multiple times a day, so long as I am open to receive the gifts that are coming my way. And how I do that, good, let me tell you, because I have 12 minutes, I came into program in 2012, and then I got abstinent February 5th, 2013, and then my life got really big, and blah, 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 yada, yada, and then I changed my date, because I tried to, I'm not a bulimic, but I tried to make myself throw up, so it was a little terrifying, and I couldn't do it, so anyways, my abstinence date is October 28th, 2013, and I've worked all 12 steps, and I'm back in 1, 2, and 3, in the book, and I do a lot of things. I mean, I was at a meeting last night, and the speaker said, trying to tell somebody about how, you know, the gifts of this program is trying to just describe to somebody what it's like jumping out of a plane. I mean, it would be that difficult, you know, I mean, like,
to go from, and the reason I spent probably so much time on that, is like to go from that kind of life to the life I have today, it's like, you can't. I mean, it's insane. It makes no sense. And I'm so grateful, like, for the life that I have in the amount of God. You know, I read a lot of AA and OA literature, and I read a lot of outside spiritual source material, and I just pull from whatever works for me. And I've really, really found through that experience of having everything taken away in terms of negative thoughts, I've really found a higher power that really works for me. And every single day, in every single moment, I'm just calling on that, you know, or not. Because sometimes when I, and we were just reading this, I think in step 8, it's the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, and the confession of our shortcomings. And if I don't want to do any of that, which sometimes I don't, I get right back into where it goes over the 4-step in the big book, and self will run riot, and made decisions based on self, which later put us in a position to be hurt, and woe is me, and I'm the victim, and watch out. And I'm telling you, and you see my emotions, I can go from my heart is overflowing with love and joy and peace, and I am abstinent, and like this salad is the best thing I've ever eaten in my life, and look at my friends. Literally, and nothing even happened. No, it's not even like a full, people are like, then a phone call or I get it. No, nothing. And all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, well, oh my God, you know, and I could just go that fast. And in case you didn't notice, I go fast in a lot of things. I don't know, it's just how it is. And so a lot of this, you know, is just a pause. We pause when agitated and doubtful and ask for the next right thought or action. I mean, the book really spells it all out for me. You know, I really like it. I'm a fan, you know. I like reading that thing. I just read it. I read this morning, chapter 3. I mean, I've read more about alcoholism. I don't even know how many times. Every time I read it, I'm like, oh, yeah, this is good. And, well, it's all good. And then I go into 12, which I'm like, oh, yeah. You know, it's like, I love reading the literature. And, like, I'm on fire for this program because this program has saved my life and has transformed my life. It has made me a completely different person. 100%. You know, and my parents were going to come tonight, but they're in Vegas. I'm like, oh, I guess we won't be hanging out for Mother's Day. My mom's like, yeah, I'll be in Vegas. I'm like, okay, cool. No, my mom's really cool. She's not like a bitch. But sorry, Mom. I'm like, you can listen to my podcast, Mom. Shout out. No, she's with my dad. She went to like this rock concert last night. Mom's like, I know. I wish there were some young people that could go, but we'll go. We'll go. Anyway. I love my parents. I hated my parents when I got here. I had such a... Because, like, you know what I mean? Like, you people. And we have the coolest relationship with my parents. You know, through those amends, which, by the way, I recommend doing your amends right the first time, because I've had to make an amends to my brother approximately 4 times, and then I constantly am making amends to my mom. I mean, I'm just trying to stay in that 10th step. I was talking about this last night. I'm like, let me not make it so big it's like an 8 and 9. Let's just keep it at a 10, you know? Like, let me just promptly admit this, because I don't want to, like, you know, because at first I'd wait, like, 4 or 5 days. Then I would tell my sponsor, I think I said something rude. And then I would write about it, and then I have to go back and make an amends. Like, I was tired for that. Just freaking be like, look, sorry, you know what I mean? I was wrong for saying this, and is there anything I can do to make it right? Is there anything I can do to make the situation more comfortable for us? You know, things like that. It's like, I just live like that now. And probably one of the greatest gifts, there's so many gifts. One of the greatest gifts is the ability to look people in the eye. It's the ability to speak to people, to be confident, to... you know, just I feel like I'm in life, like I'm in here. Like before, I felt like I was like on planet, like don't belong here, you know. And like now, I like belong. I'm like, oh right,
people around, do it, we're getting up, we're going to meditate, really, I wake up like that most days, you know, whereas before, I couldn't get out of bed for 27 hours. I mean, it's like, I always say, I'm like, you can't make this stuff up, you know, and I thank God, because I couldn't have written this. And so when it's like a life beyond my wildest dreams, like, I don't even, this is beyond anything I could have come up with, anything I've ever read, anything I've ever seen. The feeling of walking with God, like, hand in hand. I mean, I'll talk about the sunlight of the Spirit, you know, all this stuff that's in the book. I mean, this is real, you know, the promises. This has all been my experience. We intuitively know how to handle situations which baffle us. And the longer I stay in program, and the longer I practice my abstinence, and talk to my sponsor, and work with sponsees, and talk to newcomers, and go to meetings, and be of service, and imperfectly as such. Imperfectly. But just keeping that forward direction, it's like, I can't lose. I don't feel like I can lose, you know? What's better? There's not a place in the universe I'd rather be than here. You know, on a Saturday night. Like, this is great. I think. I don't know about you guys. It's just like such a cool life, you know? It's a cool life. It's a fun life. And getting to share what I've gotten out of this program with others is the biggest gift, because all three of the women that I sponsor are here. And I mean, I'm just so, when somebody asks me to sponsor them, I mean, that is the highest honor for myself. When somebody says, will you sponsor me, you know, or will you take me through the book, or will you tell me what you do in the morning, or, I mean, it's like, you know, when I've been struggling on and off a little bit, and I call my sponsor, and I'm like, are you sure you have time? Because she's very busy, she has a kid, she's a single mom, and she said, I always have time for you. I always have time to take a phone call. I always have time to talk to someone who's struggling, you know, with compulsive overeating, or just in general. And I just carry her spirit with me, you know, when I sponsor, when I'm out. This program has really bled into every area of my life, you know, which it says, you know, we practice these principles in all of our affairs. And that's really been my experience, and, you know, it's just not perfect, but, I haven't even, like, really talked about the food. I mean, because for me, the food is a symptom, you know, and the food was never my problem. The food was my solution, you know, and, I don't have, I have a completely different, I just realized I didn't talk about food for my whole entire recovery, but anyways. I mean, that shows you where I'm at. It's not about the food for me. It's not, for me, you know. It is about what is going on internally. Because I can have all sorts of stuff going on externally, and, as long as I'm right with God and I try to stay in the middle of a spiritual path and walk hand in hand with my Creator, I'm okay, and I'm not in the food, and it doesn't bother me, you know. But once I get off kilter, which happens, and I can feel it now, you know, I have awareness, like I have an idea when I'm sort of falling off, and I can get back on, you know, or not. It depends how long I choose to sit in it. And I've just realized, like, my first sponsor, like, well, you are choosing to be this way, and you are choosing, and I'm like, this is a chemical issue, which sometimes, you know, a lot of it was like, I'm just choosing to be mentally lazy, and I just want to let any old thought that chooses to just come on in, hang out, post up shop, be like, negative, 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 and poor me, and I can just let that roll around for as long as I want, and then I can be done with it. And I've learned that in this program, you know, because if you told me that before, I'd be like, no, 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 I can't control my thoughts. I have no control. I'm powerless over my thoughts. And sometimes, to some extent, that is true, but I am not powerless over what thoughts I choose to keep in my mind. Because if I hold that, I can't be judging you unless I'm myself feeling judgment. I can't be hating you unless myself I'm feeling hate. So why not just get rid of that altogether? And I've just, I like to think I'm a
nicer person as a result of this program, because it's like, I don't want, like, the longer I stay abstinent, the less crap I want and the less tolerance I have for, like, stuff, you know? Like, I feel good most of the time. So when I don't feel good, I'm like, okay, what's going on? And I want to get back to feeling where my center line is, which is with my higher power, and where I feel most comfortable. And what a program. What a program. I mean, if you're new and struggling, just keep coming back. Just sit. You know, I hold on. Sometimes I hold on to my seat and I grip it when I'm sitting in it because I'm like, this is my seat, and I don't want to give it up, you know? And I do a lot of continued service in OA, and that helps me a lot, and because I'm constantly thinking about myself, and thank God the book says that we need to have a constant thought of others, because I forget that I should be thinking about other people besides me. I think that's probably about it. So thanks, everyone.